Hello and welcome to the Footvey English podcast in collaboration with World Football Index, a unique mix of fandom and journalism. Footvey English is your one-stop shop for all things Venezuelan football in the English language, from the men's to the women's and the domestic leagues to the national teams. Welcome to another episode of the Footvey English podcast, the first of 2023. And it brings me a lot of pleasure and, to be honest, pride to say that we now have podcast sponsors. World Football Index are going to be working in collaboration with us over the course of the year, formalizing a partnership that we've had going for a number of years now. Dominic, my regular co-host, has penned numerous articles for them. Kevin has designed their first print magazine, which has had extraordinary success in predicting 10 future South American stars. That was printed 18 months ago. No, 2 years ago, in fact. And within 18 months, all 10 players had moved outside of their home nations, and even a couple of World Cup winners, Julian Alvarez being one. But that partnership keeps Footvey English going, keeps us bringing you the podcast throughout 2023. And the first one of the year is to preview the upcoming under 20 South American championships. And to discuss Venezuela at the competition is my regular co-host, Dominic Bisogno. Dominic, how are you?
I'm doing great. I want to real quick, just because, you know, it's news or it's new, I want to jump in and just add my thanks and celebration to the World Football Index deal. They've been great partners with us for a long time, and as two guys that a long time ago now but kind of just wandered around writing random articles for random websites, I think we can both appreciate a site that tries to do it the right way and all that. So they've always been very, very collaborative. I've been able to post articles on there about Liga Footvey 2, which I don't think I could probably do anywhere else. So yes, just want to thank them as well for that. But yeah, I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to talking about a really exciting tournament we got coming up.
Yeah, and we've got a couple of World Football Index collaborators forming part of this bumper podcast. Like I said, it's previewing the Sudamericano competition, which kicks off in a couple of days when this publishes, such as Simon Edwards for Colombia, Ralph Hanna for Ecuador, and Adam Brandon for Chile, but as well as yourself here to discuss Venezuela. So although the team list hasn't been officially released, we essentially know what it is. It's been leaked by a few different sources, and the team have already been in concentration for around a week now. What can you tell us about this generation, Dominic? Obviously, last year we had the Toulon tournament, and there's going to be a number of players from that we will see again. But the Toulon tournament was an under-23s tournament. This is an under-20s tournament. How can you see Venezuela's team shaping up?
I think that there's the potential for this to be a really strong roster. I think that, you know, it's funny, you noted with the Toulon tournament, of course, that was technically a larger or an older age bracket, rather. And you see that and you go, okay, well, that's that generation. But there's actually sort of a sneakily large amount of those guys are actually in this group and are actually younger than you would imagine. I think this is a really talentful roster. I think you've got some really strong domestic players still playing in Liga Footvey. They have a lot to prove. I'm sure we'll get into that. But you also have a really nice mix of experience coming from other leagues now, guys that are playing in MLS or MLS Nets Pro, a couple players that are in Europe. And so I think that, you know, we've really seen youth football, particularly in the sort of U20, U23 range, become a really important part of the landscape for La Vino Tinto in the last so many years. Say going back to the World Cup run, obviously in 2017 as an example, I think it's become such a huge spotlight to sort of show the world the importance of the talent pool in Venezuela at the youth level. And we've obviously seen the recruiting there become much more prevalent in the recent years. So I think this is another opportunity to do that, an opportunity for new players to become part of that group and prove themselves. And so, I don't know if you want to get right down to specific players yet, but I definitely think that it's an opportunity for all these guys to prove something about themselves, but it's also an opportunity for Venezuela to continue a really building legacy in the last, you know, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10 years of becoming a hub for youth talent.
Yeah, exactly. And when you said, you know, about the Toulon tournament being, you know, a slightly expanded squad, if you like, by virtue of age, the key absentees
you know, by age, will be Andrés Ferro, who had an exceptional tournament at centre-back, was in the team of the tournament. Dani Perez at Club Bruges, another one. John Aramburu and Helier De Santis are probably the key differences. But player of the tournament, not just for Venezuela, but the overall player of the tournament at the Toulon tournament was Telasco Segovia, who off the back of that tournament earned a move to Sampdoria in Serie A, awaiting his first team debut, and a key part of this team. And what's interesting is this competition is going to be, particularly for the players that are still playing within Venezuela, their first opportunity to be seen by scouts, because this tournament is heavily scouted. And for teams in Europe that don't actually eyes on scout the Venezuelan league and perhaps just data mine, this is going to be the player's first opportunity to actually be seen, whether that's live in the flesh or in video. So if we move away from the players that we have in Europe, the players that Venezuela have in Europe that are going to be in this competition, Segovia being one of them, Samuel Rodriguez, the Atletico Madrid youth keeper, being another, who would you pick out as the domestic talent in this squad?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think that there's a couple guys in this roster playing in Liga Footvey that I think are inches away from, you know, getting a big move. You got people like Yerson Chacon, who along with Segovia has already appeared for the senior national team, and of course has sort of been a talisman for Deportivo Táchira for a couple seasons now. You know, every off season there's discussion about what his future is. This is obviously a huge opportunity for him. But I also think people like Andres Romero, Emerson Ruiz, Brian Alcocer, like there's so many guys here that, you know, you can see how a great tournament for them could easily tip them over into a new adventure in 2023 or 2024. I will say that for me, Chacon and Romero feel like players that have already got tons of attention. And so how this tournament goes does feel like it could be a real proving ground for them sort of ready the next chapter of their careers.
Yeah, and those two in particular are probably amongst the most experienced players in this whole tournament, not just for Venezuela, but for every nation involved. Both of them have three full seasons under their belt and have national team caps as well. Romero made his debut in 2022 and he even bagged an assist on his debut in a friendly under Peckerman. And when we talk about the opportunity that these players are going to get, we also need to think that this is the first edition of this tournament in 4 years, and a generation, if you like, was deemed lost because when it was due to be held at the beginning of 2021, so 2 years ago now, obviously those same players or many of those same players no longer qualified to play. The Toulon tournament went some way to addressing that lost generation in getting them the exposure. But at the end of the day, that is an unofficial tournament. It's not a FIFA tournament. This, on the other hand, holds the qualification for the Under-20 World Cup, which will be hosted later this year in Indonesia. The format of the tournament is two groups of five. And I think it's fair to say, Dominic, Venezuela have been drawn in the weaker of the two groups.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, obviously, you know, part of the challenge of CONMEBOL always is that it's really packed full of talented teams. But Venezuela have dodged the teams that you would typically want to dodge. They've dodged the Brazils and, you know, the Argentinas. And so that certainly seems like a good place to start. Obviously, if they want to do well in the tournament, they'll have to get to the point where they're playing those kinds of teams. But particularly because the amount of teams that move forward in the various stages of this is pretty generous. So starting in a slightly easier or more approachable group does certainly feel like a really good launching point.
Yeah. So in Group B, for those that don't know, and this is the opening segment of the podcast, so it's the first you'll hear, and sorry if I repeat it somewhat over the next hour or so. Venezuela is in the group with Ecuador, Uruguay, Chile, and Bolivia, and three out of the five teams will advance to the final stage. And in Group A are hosts Colombia, Brazil and Argentina, Paraguay and Peru. Three teams from each group will advance to a final stage, which will just be a once-off round robin. And then the top four out of those six teams will qualify for the Under-20 World Cup. The Under-20 World Cup being where Venezuela, as national teams, have perhaps achieved their greatest success, reaching the final in 2017, losing 1-0 to England. What can you say, Dominic, would be considered a success for Venezuela at this tournament?
Well, it's interesting because you note that 2017 run to the U20 World Cup, and of course that sort of set an extremely high bar for what otherwise would be a team that would not be expecting that sort of thing. I think to a degree, a competitive run in this tournament alone can be a success if it helps these players become better known, become better connected. I will say, though, that I think it should very much be in the plans, in the goals, a realistic goal that they qualify for the U20 World Cup. I think the talent is there in this team. I think that doing so would be a huge lift to the continued growth of exposure in Venezuelan football. But obviously, it's a tough road. That being said, I think the talent is there. You got guys in this roster that are, as you've noted, are playing way more first-team football than most of the rest of the competition. You've got guys at some pretty significant clubs around the world. I think it's very possible for Venezuela to do well in this tournament. I certainly think that they should be viewing that as a reachable goal and not as a fairy tale goal. And if they do so, I think it becomes a huge moment for the history of the game in Venezuela as it was last time they made it in for 2017.
Yeah, I agree. And what I'm going to differ from now in what I'm going to do later in the podcast is I'm going to attempt for us to break down what we think perhaps our strongest 11 will be. Obviously, what Colaccini goes for. So what we will do is we will pick this based on a 4-3-3 because we know he plays with one target man, number 9. But obviously what Colaccini does in the tournament will be another thing. So to quickly run through the team list as we believe it's going to be, I think we're going to be in agreement that Samuel Rodriguez will be the starting goalkeeper currently at Atletico Madrid and was the starting goalkeeper at the Toulon tournament. In defence, and the defence all but one, Adrián Cova, are locally based. We've got Rafael Euskadegui, Rojas of La Guaira, Cova, as I said, already playing in Europe, Santiago Gomez of Academia Puerto Cabello, René Rivas of Caracas, and André Vera of Mineros. That back four, I feel like it picks itself. I'll let you choose the midfield. I'll take the pressure of the defense, Dominic. I think René Rivas will be at left back. I think Rojas will be the left sided center back. Gomez and Euskadegui to finish the back four. The midfield, like I said, perhaps the midfield and the strike we're due together with the three in midfield and the three up front. Telesco Segovia of Sampdoria, Andres Romero of Monagas, Emerson Ruiz of Mineros, Michael Ruiz, Aaron Rodriguez, Brian Ortega of Caracas, Angel Lezama of Mineros, Yerson Chacon of Deportivo Táchira, and Wiki Carmona of New York Red Bulls. And then the front line, Nestor Jimenez of Caracas, Brian Alcocer of Mineros, Jose Riesco of Philadelphia Union 2, Kevin Kelsey, new signing yet unannounced of Boston Rivas, and Luis Peña. Dominic, like I said, I'll leave it to you. How do you think the midfield three and front three will shape up?
It's interesting because you do have several players between those two lists that can kind of move between those two lines. And so that is obviously something worth noting right away, that you have multiple players here, Chacon or Romero come to mind, for example, that could play in a midfield role, but also are experienced as like wieners, for example. But I'll say Segovia has to play for me. I don't see a reason for him not to. I think he's easily the most talented midfielder available. So for me, he's a must starter. Alongside him, I'd love to see Andres Romero starting in the midfield for this team. I think that is, despite his multi-positional talent, I do think the midfield is certainly where he's best, starting on either side. Potentially right side would, preference. The third in that three is hard for me because, again, there's a lot to pick here and there's a couple of guys that can kind of switch around. If we're viewing Chacon as a midfielder, then I'm certainly very tempted to put him in that midfield. He's an exceptional talent. He can move between the lines, as I said before, in a very effective way. He's done that for a while for Tachira. Certainly can put in some great attacking moments, but can also get the job done more creatively in the midfield. So whether you play him in the midfield or the front line, I think you have to play him somewhere. I'll put him in that midfield for now. Up front is very interesting because you have two MLS adjacent players. They didn't necessarily play much in MLS last year, but MLS adjacent players in Carmona and Riascro that are extremely talented, but there's still question marks about, you know, their long term. What are they going to become? Carmona particularly did not play much last year because of some injury issues, and when he did play, it was mostly in the USL Championship. So there is some things to be determined there, I think, just in terms of what he looks like in 2023. That being said, I think if possible, it would be great to play both of them. Riasco, far more of a sort of natural forward in that situation. Carmona has played as a striker, as a central forward, but I think he can bring plenty of talent on the wings. Alongside those two, well, first of all, Chacon could very easily move up and pair with those guys. And so that's potentially an option, but I am interested to see what Kelsey can do with this tournament. I'm not necessarily sure if he fits into that front three, but I would love to see a lot of him, particularly because of the sort of excitement around his move to come. So I guess those six names are the ones that pop out to me that I feel like I really need to see a lot of in this tournament, and I think they deserve to be seen in a lot of in this tournament.
Yeah, I think for what stands out to me about this Venezuela team is the midfield talent. It is absolutely packed full of midfield talent. Telasco Segovia, Andres Romero, and Yerson Chacon have all made their national team debuts. They've all got three seasons of first team football ahead of them. All three played very well at the Toulon tournament. And that's before you even mention Emerson Ruiz and Brian Ortega, who also played pivotal roles in that tournament. Carmona, who was absent from that tournament, but in 2021 made 25 appearances in MLS. I know you said very much reduced this season due to injuries and such, but it's worth noting that New York Red Bulls used an international spot on what was a player that had just turned 18 back at the beginning of 2021. And then, yeah, Riasco and Kelsey up front. I can't see them playing together because I think they're too alike, if you like, unless you're Tony Pulis and Stoke, and he would have loved to have them together. But I am excited. I'm definitely excited. And I think Venezuela did get attention at the Toulon tournament. But I think the attention that was lacking from it due to the time of the year it happened, and also because it's not an official FIFA tournament, I think Venezuela will very much get in the next week. I really think this is a strong generation to get behind. So I'm not going to break down the other teams with you because we're going to let the experts speak about their own teams. But where do you see us finishing in this group? And can you see us ultimately qualifying for the World Cup?
I certainly can see us qualifying for the World Cup. I think that's a complete possibility. In the group, obviously, it's hard to know until we see, you know, I'm less familiar with some of the rosters for these other teams, but I think it is entirely possible for Venezuela to compete for second or third. I'm going to hold judgment on saying they're going to, you know, beat everybody and get first until I learn a little bit more about some of these other teams. But I think it is entirely possible for Venezuela, particularly with the crop that they have for this age range right now, to beat out at least a couple of these teams and confidently compete for second or third in Group B. From there, it's hard to know because we don't know exactly what will happen in Group A and so on. But I'm pretty confident in their ability to compete their way out of Group B. And I also feel like this group has the talent to make it to the World Cup and at the very least compete to do so.
Yeah, I think I think we'll definitely get to the final stage. I can see the final stage from Group A being Argentina, Brazil, and host Colombia. And then the three from our group being ourselves, Ecuador, the reigning champions from 4 years ago, And then it's a toss up between Chile and Uruguay, and I'm not going to put my name to either. I think the battle for Venezuela is to finish third or fourth in the final stage, and get through to the World Cup. Of course, winning the South American Championship would be incredible, but I think ultimately qualifying for the World Cup is, am I right to say, is a bigger achievement than just simply winning the South American Championship? Obviously, winning it qualifies you, but I think we'd be satisfied either way.
No, I think you're right. I think making that U20 World Cup again is, I mean, winning the championship obviously would be a huge deal, but making the U20 World Cup to me is the real sort of trophy of this tournament. I think, you know, there's been a lot of debate over the years following the 2017 U20 World Cup final run that Venezuela made about how important or not important that was. Obviously, there's been debate about, you know, the trajectory certain players' careers took after that and whether or not that was up to expectation. But I think that overall, that 2017 run was so vital to opening the world's eyes to the youth talent pool in Venezuela. For all the players in that group that didn't necessarily break all the glass ceilings people wanted them to, there were many that did. That's a roster that developed the Soteldos and the Cordovas and the Herreras and the Fariñezes that we all talk about now. And I think getting to another U20 World Cup and providing the opportunity for these guys to try and pave a similar path would be an absolutely huge accomplishment. I think it would potentially be and maybe even more important now that there are some eyes on Liga Footvey and on Venezuelan youth, all the more a better time to really drive home the point of what's possible for these players and the talent they have. So no, I think the absolute mission, the trophy, is making that U20 World Cup in Indonesia. And again, I think that this is a group very capable of doing that.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Dominic. We are now going to hand over to the experts to preview the other teams in the tournament, starting with Group B, purely because it's Venezuela's group, and on to Ecuador, Uruguay, Chile, and Bolivia. With me to discuss Ecuador at the upcoming Under-20 South American Championships is founder of Ecuador Heroes, Martin Benitez. Martin produced some content for FIFA during the World Cup last month, and as I said, the founder of Ecuador Heroes. Ecuador being the reigning champions of the Under-20 South American Championship. Of course, that was a long time ago now due to COVID. This is the first one in 4 years. But Martin, Ecuador still look a strong team at youth level. How are you feeling heading into the tournament?
Hi, Jordan. Thank you for having me. Really excited. I feel good about this Ecuador side. We don't have our full 100% squad. There were some players left in Europe who didn't get the pass from their European teams. So we are missing a few stars, but I look good. We look good, and hopefully make it into the World Cup in Indonesia this summer.
Patrickson Delgado is obviously a name that stands out following his move to Ajax and is one of your European contingent and obviously has been allowed to join up. Is he your key man? And alongside him, if he is, who would you say are your players to look out for?
Yeah, so Patrickson Delgado, he's a center midfielder. He's the number 10 on this Ecuador side. He comes from Ajax. He is capped for Jong Ajax this year in 2022 and has had some first-team training experience. So he's definitely our star player, our only player coming out of Europe. He will be most likely playing in a center mid trio with Sebastian Gonzalez and Oscar Zambrano of LDU Quito.
And he is one of just two players based outside of Ecuador in this tournament, the other being at Sporting Cristal. Is he another key man?
Yeah, John Sanchez, I'm not sure if he could be a starter, but he's definitely been rotating into the Ecuador youth ranks, U17s, U20s now. So Jimmy Brown, the manager, definitely has some confidence in him. We'll see if he gets a lot of minutes.
And Sebastian Torres, a fellow Ecuadorian fan that we both know well, said that Zambrano and Gonzalez were the players in your team with regular first team minutes and Medina towards the end of the season. Do you expect Ecuador to go far in this tournament?
Yes, Sebastian, great analyst for Ecuadorian football. I think, yes, Zambrano and Gonzalez, like I said, they could form a trio in the center mid with Patricio Delgado. That's probably where we're most strong is in our midfield. We look a little shaky on defense. We don't have, like I said, there's some players missing from Europe, so we don't have our 100% back line. But Ecuador looks, if Jimmy Brand can mix this team and play the way we played last time, we can definitely get it.
And one final point, or two final points, actually. Firstly, Guillermo Napa secured a fairly big deal transfer move just before the tournament. Goalkeeper now at Emelec. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, he was Guillermo Napa. He came from Orense. It was still in the Ecuador Serie A. He had his debut last year in 2022. Big move to Emelec, one of the biggest teams in Ecuador. So to trust in him, he's 19. He's very good with his feet. So maybe it could be the next Moises Ramirez that we saw come out of Inepin del Valle and the Ecuador U20 team of last time that won.
And my final question, Ecuador are in the same group as Venezuela, Group B. It's the third fixture for the two teams. How do you think Ecuador and Venezuela will fare in the group, and what do you expect from that matchup?
It's tough. Venezuela and Uruguay, too, I'd have to mention in that group is, I think Ecuador, Venezuela, Uruguay are the top three teams. Ecuador will have to face Chile and Bolivia in the first two matches, so hopefully rack up some points there, because then we would have to play Venezuela, who are a strong side. Remember, 6 years ago, they went to the World Cup final, the U20s, so they're still strong, and yeah, we're looking forward to hopefully qualifying into the final stage of the six teams.
And do you expect Ecuador to then finish in the top four of the six group final phase to qualify for that World Cup?
It's going to be really tough. Like I said, we have Argentina and Brazil on the other side. I think Ecuador can make it, but it'll be a squeeze.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us, Martin, on our whistle-stop preview of the Sudamericano Under-20s. Hopefully, after the tournament, we'll have good reason to talk again. In Group B, Venezuela will also face Uruguay in a repeat of the semi-final from the 2019 Under-20 World Cup, which, curiously, was refereed by the Polish referee that's just refereed the 2022 World Cup final between Argentina and France. But we are going to be focusing on the South American Championship today. And to discuss Uruguay is David Crackman. David, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me here. Thank you.
And very curiously, like I am not Venezuelan, David is not Uruguayan. Perhaps you'll pick up on his accent later on. But David is from the Netherlands and began his interest in Uruguayan football with Luis Suarez. David, how do you feel about Uruguay going into this tournament?
I feel excited. I think it's a good squad, but above all, I think it's always exciting when you see a new generation of players. You can assess them, you can see how they do, and you're really seeing them at the start of their careers. It reminds me a little bit when I saw Darwin Nunez, for example, in 2019, or Fede Valverde, 2017. You see these players who you believe have some talent, but also some you believe, well, they're not that good, and they go on to do something or not, and they go on to have the careers they have. So I think that's the most exciting part about this tournament, is that you see the young stars, the new stars. And yeah, it's really nice to watch these games always.
So David, you are the founder, the guy that runs Warriors of Uruguay on Twitter, an account with nearly 19,000 followers. You're dedicated to the Uruguayan national teams, and you said this tournament is an opportunity to, you know, unearth the next gem. From the Uruguayan team, who should we be looking out for?
Okay, well, I think the big name in the squad, because he's playing for Real Madrid, made his debut a week ago, is Alvaro Rodriguez. He's an 18-year-old, pretty tall forward, and he's an exciting player. And it's also going to be his first appearances for the national team, the under-20 national team, in this Sudamericano, because he was also representing Spain before. He was also born in Spain, but he's one you have to look for because he's a big player for Uruguay, hopefully in the future. Then you also got Fabricio Diaz, is the captain. He's been playing in the first division with Liverpool Montevideo for over 3 years now. And he's really an interesting player, well-balanced midfielder, doing, well, basically a bit of everything. But besides that, we have also players like Juan de los Santos, a winger from River Plate Montevideo, or even Ignacio Sosa from Phoenix. And these are all interesting players who can really, really grab the spotlights in this tournament.
And you mentioned the captain Diaz having a considerable amount of first team experience for a player of his age. Are there other players in Uruguay's under 20 team in this tournament with first team experience? It's been a talking point with the other nations. Venezuela have quite a lot of players, I think more or less influenced by the fact that we've had the presence of the youth rule in Venezuela, which stipulates every team must start with an under 20. Despite that rule being scrapped last year, it has had an influence. We've got, for example, in midfield, Telasco Segovia, as well as Mickey Romero and Yerson Chacon, who have already got three full seasons of first team football to their name. Can many players in the Uruguayan team say the same?
No, not like that. No, and the rule you say that's really is a good one. And but in Uruguay, as also with many other South American nations, it's almost like they need to promote youth, because if a player does well and he's 19 years, he's gone. So this like constant rejuvenation of the squad is happening in Uruguay as well. And for example, Nicolas Siri is an 8-year-old forward. He's also had some experience on the in professional football already, and yeah, there are some of in the team, like also Ignacio Sosa and Juan de los Santos, who I mentioned. They have already played first team football, but Fabricio Diaz is really he's different because he's already got 3 years of football, first team football being an important player, and he's the only one that can really really has this in his locker at the moment.
And back towards the end of 2022, Uruguay competed at the South American Games, and they won their group A, unbeaten. Ultimately, they finished fourth, losing to Colombia in the third place playoff. Is this a continuation of that team? Are we going to see a lot of the same faces?
Well, some of them, yeah, but there's also some new talents in there. For example, like Luciano Rodriguez. He's a young boy. He's also been doing well in Uruguay second division, now being transferred to Liverpool Montevideo. And yeah, there are some players who were in there, but most of them also are just new youngsters we don't know a lot about still.
And what are your hopes and expectations for this tournament? Is it just trying to get to the final stage, or is it an eye on qualifying for the under 20 World Cup in Indonesia?
Yeah, the under 20 World Cup qualification is really what Uruguay should aim at. And it's also what has been, well, Uruguay have been doing really well in the youth tournaments, basically, or mainly also because of Oscar Tavares and his El Proceso, which the focus on the youth became big. And Uruguay have done really well at youth tournaments in the under 20 category, but also under 17. And Uruguay really should be able to continue this, and with the squad Uruguay have, I think it's a realistic aim to have. Yeah.
Another side Venezuela will come up against at the under 20 South American Championships is Chile, and here to discuss Chile with us is Adam Brandon, an English journalist living in Chile with a specialist in their football, another World Football Index collaborator over the years. Adam, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having us on. Looking forward to getting into the chat all about Chile's under 20 squad for this tournament in Colombia.
Chile, like Venezuela, are one of four teams never to have won the competition, Bolivia being another, who are also in our group, and Peru being the fourth. And recently, Chile have had their football tested at the South American Games, just the other side of Christmas, where they finished bottom of Group B in a very tight group. There was only 3 points between top and bottom. Is that group, Adam, sorry, is that team, Adam, a continuation going into the under-20 South American Championships, or is there a lot of different faces involved?
Yeah, there's a few different faces involved. I think they actually started off that championship well, from what I remember. I think Chile got a 1-0 victory over Argentina at the start of it, but then went on to lose their other two games, like you say, in a very tight group where sort of everyone beat each other, if I remember rightly. But yeah, they were missing a couple of key men from that team.
And looking at the squad list for Chile at this tournament, there's two players playing overseas, Vicente Reyes, the goalkeeper at Atlanta United, and Tomas Avias at Racing in Argentina. So it's a very domestic-based squad. Is it a squad that have the players individually a lot of first-team minutes in Chile?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. So compared to some previous years, I would say that many of the starters in this squad do have quite a few minutes, especially the players who have been playing for Universidad de Chile regularly in the last year. So Morales at left back, Asadi in midfield, and Osorio kind of an attacker or on the wing. Unsure exactly where he's going to start in this tournament, but those three especially had a lot of game time last year in the Chilean league. With Osorio's been linked with Wolves quite heavily over the last year. Also, a couple of Italian clubs have been interested in him as well. And he's definitely going to be one of the players to watch in this world in this South American Championships. And Asadi, he's probably my favourite player of this Chile side. Midfielder who's really comfortable on the ball, very good in tight spaces, shows really good composure. Nice passing range. And yeah, I'm quite excited to see what Lucas Asadi can do on this stage.
Well, I've got no need to ask you who the players to watch out for are now. You've hit that nail on the head. So you're in a group with Venezuela, also in our group, Bolivia. Where do you see Chile getting their points?
From experience of kind of watching this tournament over the years, it is pretty unpredictable. Yeah, I can remember various tournaments. I think one going back to sort of, I think it was the 2011 one, where I think Brazil had like Neymar in their side and they went out in the group stage, for example. So it's not always particularly predictable how it's going to shape up. Having said that, I'd be very disappointed if Chile didn't pick up a win against Bolivia. But that's obviously sort of going to be one of the key victories they're going to be looking for in this group. I think it'd be an interesting game against Ecuador to start out with as well. A very good test first up. Obviously, Ecuador going into this with the confidence that, the age group won it 4 years ago. So, yeah, and that was their first ever title. So it'd be interesting if there's a bit of a mentality shift in the Ecuador camp going forward in these tournaments, especially with how prolific their youth development has been over the last few years. So, Chile, yeah, have struggled to produce at youth level historically. I think they got to the quarterfinals of the Under 20 World Cup, I think it was in 2013, and they got to the semis in 2007 with, the golden generation. But yeah, overall, as you mentioned earlier, Chile have never won this tournament. I wouldn't say Chile are particularly strong in youth football generally, for a variety of reasons. You don't see many young Chileans move abroad at a young age, for example. Chilean players, in my opinion, tend to mature later than many of their South American counterparts. So, but having said that, like I say, one of the interesting things for me going into this tournament is this group does look to be a little bit more experienced, a little bit more mature than some of the Chile sides I've seen heading into an under 20 tournament. So there is that. And we've seen some very interesting results over the last few months. I've seen them, I've saw them get absolutely played off the pitch by England. They were again missing a couple of key men in that game, but they lost 3-0 and could barely touch the ball for long spells. But you know, just like a few months later, they were beating Brazil, and they actually beat Brazil twice in the space of a week. And one of those was a 3-0 win, which was an historically bad result for the Brazil under 20s, their worst ever defeat. So, and then they drew against Uruguay, then lost against Uruguay. So it's a very kind of mixed bag heading into this tournament. Some very sort of a couple of impressive results. They look quite good in one of those games against Uruguay, in my opinion, but then in the other one, not so much. I remember they beat Peru quite well in one game, but then were quite disappointing in the other one. So yeah, consistency is a bit of an issue. It wouldn't surprise me if they got a couple of wins, a couple of defeats, and we'll have to see if that would be enough to sort of take them through to the next stage.
Yeah, three teams go through of each group of
Yeah.
five for a final stage of six, and then the four to the World Cup. If everything falls into place and Chile can have, the best tournament possible with the ability they have to hand, can you see them qualifying for the World Cup?
I don't think you can completely rule it out. I'd probably be slightly pleasantly surprised if they did. But I wouldn't say it's like an impossibility. A lot's going to depend probably on just how well the Universidad de Chile duo of Lucas Azari and Dario Osorio do. One other player that I should probably give a little bit of attention to, given how well he performed in those games against Brazil last year, and that's the goalkeeper you mentioned earlier, Vicente Reyes. Yeah, like you said, he's based in MOS for Atlanta United, and yeah, he's like being considered a real find here, and has really impressed the coaches apparently, and yeah, and he showed his skills in those games against Brazil.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up with a question with no pressure attached to it. Obviously, we're in the same group, Chile and Venezuela. It's the final game for both teams. Hopefully, there won't be anything riding on it. But Chile or Venezuela in that game, who are you backing?
Well, I'm gonna have to say Chile. I
Okay.
mean, I might
No
get
problem.
lynched in the country if people listen to this. No, it's a no. I think I'm no expert on the current Venezuela under 20 squad. I look forward to listening to the pod to gain some more knowledge on it. But it doesn't look like to me anyway. I'll be interested to hear your thoughts. A squad necessarily stronger than the last couple you've sent to these tournaments.
And lastly, in Group B, we're speaking with Miguel Valero, a Venezuelan football scout that specializes in Venezuelan and Bolivian youth players. Bolivia in Group B alongside Venezuela. Venezuela and Bolivia played two warm-up friendlies last month in preparation for this tournament. Venezuela winning 1-2-0 and drawing the second one 3-3. The two games were played in the space of 3 days. And Miguel is with us as our Bolivian expert. But Miguel, thank you for joining us. Bolivia and Venezuela's group play each other first, and Venezuela will see this as a perfect opportunity to get 3 points. Do you think Bolivia are capable of causing some upset at this tournament?
Okay, how can I, Jordan, says Bolivia's under 20 teams arrive at the tournament at the Sudamericano with three friendly games, two between Venezuela and another between Peru, with two drums and one loss. In this friendly, Bolivia can defeat Venezuela, and the gap that he could tie, he did so thanks to two penalty goals and with a man expelled from Venezuela, that was Andres Romero. It doesn't mean that Bolivia can defeat Venezuela. In the competition, everything can happen. Probably in the last days, Pablo Escobar is working on the details and on the mistakes that he made in the friendlies to win against Venezuela. From Venezuela's point of view, losing the first game can be a problem. Everyone wants to start winning. And in an equal group, those who take the lead can be the ones who qualify for the next round.
Perfect. And who would you say from Bolivia's team, who are the key players? Who are the players that can cause the opposition some problems?
Okay. Unfortunately, Bolivia will not be able to count on its best promising player. That is Miguel Terceros from the historic Brazilian Santos, because the club decided not to land him for the tournament. He was called to be the commander of his group, but his team has been bullied a good scouting from Pablo Escobar and the Bolivian Federation. Having players like Diego Parrado, an attacking midfielder from Real Madrid, who can be the revelation if shows his European formation. And from Colo-Colo, we have Ervin Bacca, another midfielder with a technical quality and arrival in the definition area, a box-to-box with an excellent biotype. Another promising player from USA, Efraín Morales, Atlanta United former, is an excellent centre-back, next to play with first teams in MLS, who is called to be leader of the Bolivian defence. And in the forwards, they have Daniel Rivera from Talleres de Córdoba, Argentina, playing in the reserve of Talleres, could be the most dangerous player in the rival area. And another player in Brazil is Fernando Nava, a winger, playing in Paranaense, under 20 team, can make the difference physically and with his dribbling.
Okay, so Bolivia, despite being without a player from Santos, have a number of players playing outside of Bolivia. We heard there Real Madrid, Paranaense, even some in MLS, which, you know, many, many listeners are probably surprised to hear. Miguel, our third question. Are many of these Bolivian players playing first team minutes or playing in Bolivia's Premier Division regularly?
Unfortunately, not. Most of the local football players have few minutes in the Premier Division, and with some exceptions, such as Denilson Duran from Blooming, with 32 games played and one goal scored, and John Jairo Velasco, left football from Guavirá, with more than 4,000 minutes and 59 games played. And I think the greatest potential isn't those who can play abroad, knowing that the level of the Bolivian league is one of the lowest in South America.
Okay, and finally, what are your expectations for Bolivia at this tournament?
Well, Bolivia has never been qualified for an under-20 World Cup. This year, it will depend on the level of play proposed by the national team. It is a short tournament, and anything that is not focused will find it difficult to aspire to qualify. Bolivia, in this group, has rivals that have had very good participations in this tournament, such as Ecuador, recently champion in 2019, Uruguay, and Venezuela, that was finalist in 2017 World Cup under 20. On this occasion, Bolivia may have enough of the most talented generation, but I don't know if that was enough to achieve the objective of qualifying. In addition to the already mentioned loss of one of the best players, such as Miguel Terceros.
Miguel, thank you very much for your answers. It's hard enough for anyone in the world to find somebody that can speak about Bolivian football, let alone speak about Bolivian football in English. And of course, English is not your first language. So thank you so much for putting the effort in. We really appreciate it. And that is the end of part one of our preview for the under-20 South American Championships. Later this week, we will have part two on Group A featuring Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Paraguay and Peru. But for today, that is all. This is the Football English Podcast. Thank you.